welcome back to This Week on Channel 9. I'm Brian Keller.
I'm Dan Fernandez.
What have we got?
We got MicroWho.
Some security exploits.
Some Expression Studio for you to download if you're an MSN subscriber.
And some things that are getting cut from the product. Look at me, I'm already Mr. Negativity here.
What's what cut on the product? Let's get right into it, though.
Yes, let's do it.
Boom! Microsoft Yahoo.
MicroWho?
Yasoft.
Yeah, Yasoft.
Yeah, nice. Yasoft. Very nice.
Reminds me of 18 months ago.
Exactly. So, 10-year deal. Yahoo properties that were using the Yahoo search engine will now use Bing for their search results. What else is of interest here?
So basically, Yahoo is getting out of the search optimization and building their own search engine game and handing that over to Bing. So that's kind of interesting. And Microsoft is going to basically get 12% of the revenue from searches that happen on Yahoo's properties as a result. So basically, Yahoo's kind of outsourcing their search to Microsoft for this 10-year deal. Mm-hmm. That's the best way to look at it. What a lot of people don't know about this is that Yahoo Search will now be powered by Bing Search, which is actually powered by Lycos behind the scenes.
Don't bring the Lycos theory. Everybody knows that's false.
Yeah.
So what does this mean for developers? Not much on the Bing side. We've talked about some of the things where Bing's opened up their API for commercial public use.
Mm-hmm.
But there are a couple of Yahoo tools. SearchMonkey is one that allows you to add metadata to your website. So say I was doing IMDb and that's my site. I could add things like somebody searched for an actor. I could add favorite movie, number of movies, casting years, et cetera.
Just structured data to help the search engines.
Exactly, and actually have it appear in the results based on that custom structured data. Second thing is Boss, which was just the name of their API, for their search API. So this post, they basically say, we don't know how these things are going to be affected. They could, for example, be using Bing underneath the covers or mm-hmm. or what happens, especially with the deal where I think we actually get access to the Yahoo search IP.
Oh.
So there could be some sort of integration to help customers along as well. So, but who knows? It's all speculation at this point. Stay tuned for further announcements.
Something to keep an eye on. All right. So Expression Studio 3 has finally RTM'd, and it's actually available for MSDN subscribers as of right now. So
Brian Peake confirmed.
That's right. So even though Win 7 and Windows Server 2008, they've RTM'd, they're not quite on the subscriber downloads. Expression Studio has, and it's now available. So start your downloads. Includes Sketchflow, includes the new Expression Encoder 3, which I'm still dying to give it a try, but it's supposed to be really great for recording screencasts. And what else? What am I forgetting here?
Expression Web,
of
Expression
course,
Design.
Blends. Yep. So.
Yeah. So, good stuff.
Cool.
Add to your download list.
So here's the security update. So Active Template Library, it turns out that there's some...
ATL.
For C++ developers, it turns out that there was a security hole in it. And what I love about this is that Charles actually went over and talked to the team and went to the whiteboard and basically went step by step to explain exactly what this security vulnerability is.
Right.
A lot of the time you see these security bulletins come out and they say, a hijacker may take over your computer if they go to a certain bad website address or something like that, but here the team is being extremely transparent, explaining exactly what happened with the security vulnerability, and also explaining what you can do just to totally turn off your control so that it can't be hosted within a browser.
That's the kill bit?
That's the kill bit. Yep.
So if you're building a control that isn't going to be hosted in the browser, you can add a kill bit, and that way you don't have to worry about that.
Exactly.
Now, a couple things to keep in mind is... that it's not Visual Studio itself that's vulnerable, although there is a Visual Studio update. It's the controls that are vulnerable. And this chart goes through the specific vulnerabilities and which Visual Studio product is affected, meaning which controls in the Visual Studio products. And the ones that have stars means they're partially mitigated, and there's a lot more information in our links that goes through... in detail, but things for people to keep in mind, especially if they're using old versions of the product.
Yeah, and I actually, before we dug into this story, I went to Windows Update like everyone else does on Tuesday, and I saw this notice that said that Visual Studio 2008 SP1 had this security vulnerability, and I had no idea what it was about. So it's good to know that it's not actually Visual Studio itself that's impacted. It's just the code that it produces if you're using ATL controls.
Yes. Now, how did it actually happen? This is one of the cool things that I love about Michael Howard. He goes through on the Security Development Lifecycle blog and actually walks through the code that caused this. This is a buffer overrun that happened.
Mm-hmm.
Right? So the very top thing, you can see the H result here where you're reading a stream and then doing a cast. That ampersand is the reason it's vulnerable. Now you would think, especially with C++ and a number of automated tools, to look for vulnerabilities and explicitly look for buffer overruns. And Michael had previously talked about the SQL Server vulnerabilities that would have been found if there were automated tools using...
Like SQL Slammer and stuff?
The Slammer virus, yep. Exactly. In this case, it wouldn't have found it, and one of the reasons why is because it's casting data. So at some point, you know, when you're doing that casting, it's sort of like, he calls it like... the you know what you're doing,
right?
If you will, and if they actually turned on searching for this, then you'd get a bunch of false positives, and you know you now have 1,000 quote vulnerabilities.
Too much noise, yeah.
Yeah, exactly. So then people would turn it off, and really, is it effective? But fascinating to go through sort of the step by step in how the bug was found and how they're mitigating.
Yep, definitely. It's a good post. And here's another one that talks about Perspective 3D in Silverlight.
Yeah, this is Charles Petzold. He goes through just setting some XAML to actually have this animated, and he has a live live demo that you can play with. So, cool stuff.
Yep, definitely. He also talks a little bit about why Perspective 3D is not the same as actual full-blown
2D, 3D.
Yeah. 3D. You don't have those Z-buffers.
It's 3D with quotes.
Exactly. So there's some changes to the Xbox Live Creators Club. First and foremost, I didn't know this was happening. The Xbox Live Community Games is now Xbox Live Indie Games.
Right.
So that's interesting. I'm wondering why they made those changes, but I guess it makes sense for them. And then they...
Reputation system.
There's a reputation system for the actual content creators. That's correct. They've made some changes to the pricing model. Looks like they're across the board trying to make the games a little bit less expensive, so that I guess they're trying to increase the volume, but not sure. I'm speculating there.
Tokens that you can give away for free games.
That's right. So you can you know, email all of the top reviewers and say, hey, check out my game. Here's a free token. They can check it out, and they can hopefully write a good review about your game. And also updates as well. So in the past, you could update your game, but you'd kind of have to, you were left to your own mechanisms to let people know there was a new version available. Now what you can do is you can actually update it, and just like any other title, when they go to launch that game, it will say, hey, there's a new version of this game available. Do you want to download it, and you get all the yummy goodness that is the new version. So,
lots of cool stuff.
Definitely.
Now, Hanu actually walks through what happens in the case, and it's somewhat of a corner case, but Silverlight versioning. So, what happens if you have a web page, and that web page has multiple versions of Silverlight controls on it? Let's say, for example, we have our video player. Our video player is going to stay Silverlight 2 and needs to work in Silverlight 2. We have this other control that's doing 3D,
mm-hmm.
You know, that 3D Silverlight. How does it actually work? Well, what happens is, and he walks through just sort of a simple diagram, that it will spin up an application domain, so it its own house, if you will, for that Silverlight 2 application to live, and same one for the Silverlight 3 application. So they're actually in different app domains, and the goal being that you wouldn't have to, because you can only have one Silverlight plugin.
Mm-hmm.
The Silverlight 3 can actually support hosting and working towards the features that Silverlight 2 has,
so
all within the same runtime.
So it's one CLR, it's a Silverlight 3 CLR, but it's actually hosting and running both those app domains.
Yes, and that Silverlight 2 app domain is with features that are only in Silverlight 2.
Gotcha.
Right.
Yep. Cool.
Interesting.
So here's kind of the, I like what you call it, the rest in peace list. So Habib Haidarian, one of our favorite bloggers, posted a list of some of the things that we know are getting cut from Visual Studio 2010. And so it's getting to be that time in the product that we're taking the assessment and making some really hard decisions about what's going to go and what's going to stay. And so there's a few worth mentioning. Actually, none of these are new features. These are all features that were left over from Visual Studio 2008 that they've decided to cut. So the things we're talking about for Visual Studio 2010, I'm sure at some point we'll also find another similar cut list of things that just didn't make it into the product. But these are things that are being pulled out for a variety of reasons.
Sure.
And so the first of these is the App Verifier. Another one is IntelliSense for C++ CLI code. So that's only C++ CLI code.
And what that means is managed C++. Visual Studio 2010 won't support managed C++ IntelliSense, which is a big thing, but one of the keys they're trying to have is an amazing native experience for C++.
Right, so they've totally redone the IntelliSense, and that was just one of the things that ended up getting cut. And Habib's quick to point out that he expects that's something that will be added in very quickly after Dev 10, so he doesn't say whether or not that's Dev 11 or a service pack or anything like that, but they do acknowledge it is a hard cut. Also, the Object Test Bench.
Yes, was very cut. Familiar with that one.
Very familiar with the Object Test Bench. It lets you kind of visually explore your objects. So you can say, I've got, you know, a cat class, right-click, instantiate, I've got a cat, and then let's see what happens.
Yeah, the BlueJay example, right?
BlueJay functionality, right. And so that's been cut. And what are we forgetting here?
SQL Server 2000 debugging.
Exactly.
So if you need SQL Server 2000 debugging, just don't use Visual Studio 2010.
Right.
Similarly, if you need managed C++ support, and again, it depends on the version of the framework, you could always use Visual Studio 2008 to get the IntelliSense support.
Yeah, and the SQL 2000 actually makes sense for a couple of reasons. The database professional projects in 2010 will only support 2005 and 2008 versions of SQL Server as well.
Right.
So you'll notice that the 2000 projects are cut from there as well. So again, same story. You can continue to using 2008 to target those versions of the framework or versions of SQL Server, but it won't make it to 2010.
So, good stuff.
Yep.
Good to know.
Season finale of History of Microsoft.
I don't
want to
win.
Yep.
Okay. No, we're not going to sing cheesy WB songs.
Well, you've already done it, so.
Okay.
Yeah, we're not going to do it anymore.
We're not going to do it anymore.
We might do it at the end.
1999. This is the last episode of History of Microsoft.
Yeah, which is a great show. It's sad to see it go, but Tina says that she is working on the next decade. So trying to figure out what she's going to do for 2000 to 2009.
Yeah, yeah, because it kind of doesn't make sense. History of Microsoft, last year.
Last week, yeah.
It doesn't necessarily That's true. Make sense.
Yep.
So.
But this is the year that Office 2000 was launched. What else? Those little... those little toys, I don't remember what they're called.
Furby?
Is it a Furby? Yeah.
Forget.
It's something that Microsoft was involved in that's totally like...
Furby, I think.
Yeah? All right, we have to go watch
so.
The...
All right, maybe.
Yeah.
Anyways.
But anyway, watch the episode. Great series. And if you haven't been watching, definitely go back and check them all out. It's pretty interesting.
Cool.
CodePlex Wiki Engine source code release now available on SourceForge.
No, not SourceForge. CodePlex.
CodePlex, right. It's available on CodePlex.
It would be hilarious if the CodePlex team decided to publish on SourceForge.
I think it would be a good gesture, a gesture of goodwill, you know?
We love SVN only. Yeah. TFS does not scale.
So what's this? Is it the wiki
that
powers CodePlex? You can go grab it and check out all the source code and host it yourself.
Yeah, it includes all the macros that they support, for formatting, bulleted list, item list, links, all that stuff.
What about the the bug list? Is that included here? Like
no,
being
this
able
is
to
just for
just
their
wiki.
So okay. Things like their it's a good question on that's sort of like when you're in the text box and doing the bang bang, for example. Exclamation mark for H2. What's actually appropriate and what parts are not included in this, but my understanding is just the wiki engine.
Okay. I would love to be able to get
so
the
discussions,
feature
issue
list.
Tracker,
yeah.
All that stuff, no.
Gotcha. Yeah, the issue tracker is my favorite. Nothing against the wiki. I'm just, I love the issue tracker.
All right.
Yeah. Multi-part series on using the Microsoft Chart Control within an ASP.NET application. So this is the ASP.NET Chart Control. Nothing fancy here. No third-party controls. Right?
Yeah. So Scott Mitchell, who's probably well known, goes through a series of tutorials on how to use these controls. So you know, you set the control declaratively on the ASP.NET page, and then how do you actually plug in data? And you can see sort of the image there.
Yep.
For using some random data. But these are great if you never use the controls to actually walk through step-by-step building your own.
Yep, exactly. And maybe even integrating it with the wiki page from Codeplex. That would be cool. So app code compatible with Blend. I don't understand this one.
Okay, so you're in Expression Blend. These are people that are using Expression Blend, which isn't you, but that's okay.
The developers.
Developer.
Yep.
Diviners. So... you want design time support from Blend. Challenge is there's going to be some times maybe you're using WCF services, maybe using MVVM and declaratively setting a model, meaning I'm setting the model definition in XAML specifically. You'll get this error that Blend doesn't support design time. Well, it turns out you can actually check for that in your code, and it's designerproperties.get is in design mode, and then application.current.rootVisual. That'll return true or false if it's actually in Expression Blend. So I can tell whether the designer's in this mode, and that way I won't get this like null reference object issue.
See.
And I can now get design time support in the UI. And you know, it's just a couple lines of code that you can add within your method to check for that, and then return.
So you can do something. I remember years ago learning how to do something similar when you were building .NET Compact Framework applications, because you could. You could do something similar to say whether or not you were in the designer or in the emulator or what have you. So
yeah, exactly. So this is really to provide design time support for stuff.
Gotcha.
Give me an empty object, for example.
Okay, cool. That's pretty neat. And experimental .NET Framework 4. So this one was really confusing when it came out because basically the way that the news came out, it said there was a second version of the .NET Framework 4 Beta 1 that supported STM. And so there was a lot of confusion. What's this all about?
Yeah, so what it is a DevLabs release, and DevLabs releases are kind of unsupported projects, but it sort of shows, you know, innovation, and it's a place for DevDiv to kind of try new things. So what this is .NET Framework 4, and there's a video that Charles had on parallelism before that talked about how to use transactional memory to try and avoid or try and enhance parallel computing. So how do I make something happen like in a transaction, if you will? So what I'd recommend for people that are interested in trying this is actually download the STM.NET framework, which I believe you have to use Visual Studio 2008 for. So
okay.
It is important to know that. There's a project template for it, and what it allows you to do is actually basically scope things that this is going to be atomic in a transaction. Why are we doing this, or what's the entire reason? Is to avoid race conditions, where you have multiple threads that are doing things. You're going to get a ton of errors, say, in Visual Studio. How do you avoid those? This is one way of using something that developers are familiar with, working with transactions, applying that to try and solve this issue of we now have five threads and they're all trying to write to one thing, and you're going to have these weird race conditions. So.
Gotcha. So
parallel programming.
Yep.
STM.
Gotcha.
One potential solution, and there are several solutions, but this is one that relies on transactions to try and solve it.
Gotcha. So another solution to race conditions. Obama hosting a beer in the White House this week with
what?
You guys.
What?
Yeah.
What? I don't remember that on Soma's blog.
No, it's totally different types of race conditions here. So, MEF utility, picks of the week.
Picks of the week.
Yeah, get excited. There we
Jeez.
Go.
Okay, you're going to steal my pick of the week?
Yeah, no, you take it. It's all you.
No, my pick of the week. Okay, MEF utility runner, manage extensibility. And this is, maybe the name's slightly confusing, but what this is an extensible task tray. So, you know, you install like a bunch of small applications.
Mm-hmm.
You now have like 10 task tray applications, and Windows 7 makes this easy by basically hiding them.
Right.
But really, what you want to have is have them have all the features and still have them running. Right. So what this allows you to do is actually run all of your utilities and have them be extensions. So I drop a DLL in a specific location right to the interfaces of the utility runner, which would be like turn on, turn off.
Mm-hmm.
I get all the benefits of MEF. So what does that mean? I have multiple utilities. Like one of them is Twevo. which is TiVo for your Twitter for your TiVo. Right, so it'll tell you kind of like what your TiVo's recording and actually send messages.
Nice.
It's a project Brian Peake's working on, and that's going to have application isolation. So if that one crashes, it's not going to crash the GPS provider, for example, or another extension. You can see, and there's a bunch of features, you know, to do things like alerting and so forth. So and you write a couple of code, a little bit of code for their interface, like what am I going to do on start, what am I going to do on stop, and so forth. And this is like a host for a number of small application utilities.
Okay.
Whole application's available on Coding for Fun, but Brian Peake interviews Arian Culp on the whole details.
Nice. That's really cool.
Yeah.
So it's called the Meph Utility Runner.
Yes. Like, it runs utilities. It is should maybe be a, you know, a utility host or something. It needs a new name.
The Utility Runner powered by Meph.
Okay. And the problem, too, is it has Stacey W's icon there, which is Roadrunner, so it's confusing me even.
BB. All right, so my pick of the week, so this is an interview that Linus Torvalds gave in response to the fact that what we talked about last week, where Microsoft contributed source code to the Linux kernel. And so he goes through here and he talks about you know, his longstanding relationship with the open source community and with Microsoft, and talks about the type of contribution that Microsoft gave, where it's, you know, basically driver software that helps it run better under under virtualization. But then he makes this interesting comment in there, talking about how he thinks that that Microsoft hatred is this disease. He talks about how he's not religious when it comes to technology's decisions. He's very pragmatic. He talks about how everybody that's really involved in open source or any sort of software writing is doing so for their own selfish reasons. And it may be that you're out to make money. It may be that you're out to become famous. It may be that you just want to solve problems. But I thought it was a really nice gesture, and talks about how, hey, don't confuse me, you know, the guy
don't
behind Linux.
Don't associate me with these people that are all about, like, hatred and exclusion.
Exactly. Exactly. So that was a pretty nice gesture. So nice to see, and good interview.
Yeah. Yep. Cool stuff. And that was by Preston Gall in Computer World.
Yep. That's right. So that's another episode. Do we want to talk about the fact that you're not going to be here?
I know. We are on baby watch. So
literally, this phone could ring at any moment.
Yeah.
There's an app for that. So so Dan won't be here next week. He'll be working with his newborn baby, and we will have a special guest for you. So Christian Linsberger is going to be here next week, and we'll have a special guest every week next month. So something to look forward to. Unless you're a big fan of Dan, in which case, tune in September.
I'll be happy that I'm not here. No. Okay, great. Thanks.
We'll see you next week.